in order for me to get out of the SHU, I have to provide information on another inmate so that that inmate can take my place in the SHU. Where's the humanity in that? That in order for me to get out, I have to put somebody in there. I have to betray somebody and have them go through the same thing that I was going through, and not just the individual in there, but also the family outside.
Okay, so that's Danny Murillo, who we heard from, who was an inmate at Pelican Bay, and he's talking about this whole process that you're trying to explain to us, which is debriefing. Essentially, you need to admit to being in a gang and identify others mm-hmm. who are in a gang.
That's right.
And so what Danny was saying is that that just means that you're going to send somebody else to the SHU.
Right. And the CDCR's perspective on that is, if we have sent you to the security housing unit for active gang activity, and that gang activity, according to the CDCR, happens both inside the prison and it is porous, that it transfers outside the prison on the streets of California as well, that the one way that they can try and control gang activity is by asking or demanding that you give up your gang-affiliated activity before you are able to leave this isolated, secure environment, so that they can try and control how much power the gangs have inside the California prison system. The problem with that is when the CDCR asks someone or demands that they debrief, it's not just saying, oh, I know Joe. You have to actually, over 6 years, identify every gang activity you've been involved in, everyone you knew in the gang by name and by date. And they go back and check all this information. So if you're just giving them, you know, false information, it's not going to happen.
So does that put somebody at risk of retaliation if they have informed on other gang members?
Well, that's why after you go into the debriefing process, you're put into a separate unit of the security housing unit of Pelican Bay. And when you eventually leave, you go into protective custody.
So, Nancy, what are the demands of these hunger strikers?
Well, the one thing, their primary demand is that they want an end to the indeterminate SHU term. They want a 5-year limited SHU term. So whether you've debriefed, whether you've ended your gang-affiliated activity, whether you've identified any other gang members that you've been affiliated with, you relieve the SHU facility. And the other things that they're asking for are they would like more goods and services inside the security housing unit. So basically, it's the conditions. They want to be able to have contact visits with their families. Right now, they have to meet with family members behind glass windows.
And that's Nancy Mullane. She's a reporter who's covered the prison system for KALW for many years. She's the author of Life After Murder. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. And we're talking about the ongoing hunger strike across California state prisons and the conditions in security housing units where inmates are sometimes segregated for alleged affiliations to prison gangs. And so, Nancy, you just explained what the demands of the hunger strikers are. How is the CDCR, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, responding?
Well, they last week, for the first time since the hunger strike began on July 8th, representatives of the CDCR met with representatives of the hunger strike supporters. James Beard, who's the secretary of the CDCR, did not join in that meeting. But they talked about some of the, both sides. They tried to discuss what the concerns were, what the demands were of the hunger strike. But at this point, there are 385 men and women inside the California Department of Corrections that have been on the hunger strike since day one, July 8th. And there are about another 150. There's about 561 total. But of the 150 additional, they have gone on and off the hunger strike, but they are currently on the hunger strike. So it's about a total of 561.
And about 100 healthcare providers signed on to an open letter denouncing any denial of medical care to prisoners on strike and urging the governor to negotiate with the strikers. So what's the prison required to do for an inmate medically when he's officially on strike?
Well, that's, if the prisoner has signed a do not resuscitate or they have special medical, they've signed orders, right now, the CDCR is, from my understanding with my conversations with individuals inside the CDCR, that they're monitoring the situation, that they are regularly checking into the health of the members of the hunger strike. I did receive a letter from a man named Richard, who is inside the Adjustment Center at San Quentin State Prison. He sent this letter on July 16th, his ninth day on the hunger strike. And the Adjustment Center at San Quentin is it's reception. It's where we first send inmates who have been sentenced to death row. And there are about 100 men on death row in the Adjustment Center. There's over 700 on death row in the state, but at this one center. And those are absolutely solitary confinement environments. And this man wrote, "We are currently into our ninth day of this hunger strike and being neglected by medical. No one has had their blood drawn in order to determine if any of us are suffering from dehydration or other internal ailments that would be deemed as a need for immediate medical attention." He says, "Merely weighing us is not sufficient enough, which they've barely done for the first time yesterday." So that would have been on the eighth day of the hunger strike. "It should have taken place on July 11th. San Quentin is not following Chapter 12 medical policies and mass organized hunger strike policy, inmate medical services policies and procedures." So his concern, thus far, some prisoners have been told that all they'll receive out of a hunger strike is hunger, a quote by a captain that he quoted. So I think that one of the real problems with knowing what kind of medical attention these inmates on the hunger strike, the 561 that are currently on the hunger strike, are receiving, is it's hard to get any independent data out or any independent reports out because there is no press access inside any of the prisons in California. I have had now two representatives from the California Department of Corrections press office saying there will be no press access of any reporters inside any California prison until this hunger strike is over. So that means whatever information we're getting is from a letter like I just received from a Richard at the Adjustment Center in San Quentin. But that was, you know, a week and a half ago. So I have or what the CDCR is telling us.
And why is the CDCR restricting press access?
That is their policy. They have given no reason why they're restricting access other than that is their policy that, you know, until the hunger strike is over. And I'm sure, you know, if I had pushed for an answer, I would have been told safety and security of the institution. But right now, there is no press access.
So you're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. I'm speaking with Nancy Mullane, who covers prison issues for KALW. And we're talking about the hunger strike across California state prisons right now. I think, Nancy, one of the things that most of us forget is that most prisoners get out. And let's hear again from Danny Murillo, who spent 14 years total in the prison system, two of those years as a minor, 7 years he spent in the security housing unit. Danny spoke with KALW's Martina Castro about what he found most challenging about being in the SHU.
I think for me was being able to control my anger. I went in there already a very angry person from things that happened that I've been exposed to as a child, you know? So going in there, you know, it only reinforces it. You know, and it's because of the little things that happen too, you know. For instance, it might be time for you to take a shower. And for some reason, the prison guard didn't want to let you out. And whatever, you know, he might be doing it for you know, to be a jerk, or he might be, you know, we don't know. But just little things like that, when you know you have something coming, at least for me, if I knew I had something coming and I didn't get it, that would really, you know, piss me off. You know, and those little things like that, you know, that set somebody up. And when you don't get the help to be able to deal with those issues, we're coming home with that. It's not just something that, you know, once you get out of prison, like, okay, I'm going to leave it here. It doesn't work that way. You know, it's something that I'm going to carry with me for the rest of my life.
What are some of the ways that you carry it with you? I mean, what are the things that from that time that still stick with you?
I'm still working through a lot of this stuff, you know, and for me, you know, when I first got out, it was hard for me to be around a lot of people. And constantly having to watch my back when I'm not even in that type of space where I have to be doing that. For me, in Pelican Bay State Prison, in prison throughout prison, because we're not offered any kind of therapy or counseling, I think for me, exercise was very therapeutic for me. And it allowed me to think about things. I would always constantly, every time I would work out, I was always constantly thinking about something in my mind and, you know, how am I going to approach this or try to figure out what's the right thing to do in a certain situation, you know? Because, you know, working out and also, like, doing little arts and crafts things, you know, I used to make a lot of chess pieces, which helped me to maintain my sanity.
That's Danny Murillo. He's a former inmate who spent 7 years in the SHU, in the security housing unit, Nancy. And so he really talks about not being prepared for release. Mm. Is that an issue with the hunger strikers?
Well, I think that's an issue with any prisoner in a California institution. We do not provide true alternative education or job training while inmates are inside California prisons. And if you're inside the security housing unit and you are being asked to debrief, to get out of the security housing unit, and all you've known is gang-affiliated activity in your adult life, and then you have to make this leap and you have to leave behind your gang affiliation, what alternatives are we really providing for these men as they go into protective custody at outside prisons away from the security housing unit, where they have to be protected because now they're considered a target? So are we providing true educational opportunity? Are we providing true job service opportunity? So when they get out of prison, they have an alternative lifestyle. And I think that's the biggest problem with this situation, is we're asking them to make this leap, but are we really providing them with an alternative life, a safe and secure life when they do get out of prison on the outside, where they have a way of providing for themselves and their families?